The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone. This episode of H2O, Jason Hunt here, sitting across the table from Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
Who is commiserating on his internet woes.
Oh, good Lord, yes. I am in that... I'm about to have Google Fiber.
Someday.
About to. And unfortunately, about to has a big, long gap in time in there that is unspecified.
We need to get Google Fiber as a sponsor.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, Google Fiber.
I'm about to have my internet go away. Because my previous internet service, which was my nifty little wireless service, I could go around town, take it with me. Actually, I could go around the country, take it with me.
Sure.
And I was always connected.
Yep.
Very inexpensive, about half the time a really fantastic signal, about half the time a signal. But, you know, overall it worked really well. And then a certain company purchased them.
Based here in Kansas City.
Yeah. And decided they wanted to use the bandwidth for something else. So my internet company is about to cease to exist as of midnight of this recording.
Dang capitalists. Right.
Yeah. So curse you, monies. So I'm in that funny little state where I'm about to have really good internet at some point because I called them today and they're fine folks over there. We have a Google Fiber here in Kansas City is done some amazing neat stuff. We're very happy to have them.
First in the world.
That's right.
In Kansas City.
But at the same time, they also cannot tell me at this time when I will be connected. So I was like, I'm a grown-up in the 21st century. What do you mean?
These are first-world problems.
I know. Come on.
Speaking of money, we're still using money. But there is a time in the future when they're not using money. And that's our topic for tonight. From the mailbag.
The sound you are hearing.
Yes, this is me
actual
with actual
paper.
Paper. I'm like Samuel T. Coglin.
Who do you think you are, Samuel
books,
T. Coglin?
Books, young man, books. We have been soliciting questions and opinions and feedback and such on the hotline and on the email and on the social media, which you can find h2o@sci-fi4me.com is the email.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to actually put voice to tape, you can call our hotline. It's 573-42-SCI-FI and leave your question there or opinion or you know, tell us to go take a flying leap. We'll take that message too. But this question comes from Thomas, who's one of our Patreon sponsors.
Yes.
And we do appreciate the support there. If you want to pledge your support as well, you can go to patreon.com/sci-fi4me. Thomas asked, this was 3 days ago. So I guess this was Monday.
Okay.
Monday, he sends a note. He says, "What thoughts do you have about the new Star Trek series just announced by CBS?"
Wait, is there a new Star Trek series announced by CBS?
See, and this was early Monday morning when I saw this.
Right.
And I thought to myself, it's not a new Star Trek CBS. What? And my first thought was the Michael Dorn thing. Or the Brian Fuller thing. We've heard rumors for years. Michael Dorn has been trying to make making the pitch to CBS to do a Captain Worf series.
Sure.
And Brian Fuller has his pitch that he's been doing, trying to get Star Trek back on the air.
Right.
And our understanding always has been that there wasn't going to be a Star Trek on TV for a while because it would take away from the movies.
Right. That was sort of the general consensus.
Yeah. And at one point, there was even talk about an animated Star Trek coming back with Orci and Kurtzman.
Right. Well, there was the animated version that was set in the far, far future, which would have meant basically a complete redesign of everything.
I think those designs actually ended up in the Star Trek Online game, if I'm not mistaken.
I think some of them did, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was kind of interesting. I thought it was an interesting premise, which kind of had some echoes in the book line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Yeah.
So I'm getting started in my day on Monday, and it's rolling around in my Star Trek's not coming back. And I get into get all the computers and get all the machines up and running, and it comes across the wires.
Mm-hmm.
That's old timey speak for finding it on the computer. those of you who haven't been around for a while, back in the day, radio stations and TV stations had these things called teletype machines. They were these big printers. A lot of the times they were dot and matrix printers. And those were connected by wire, hence the words, by wire to various news organizations like Associated Press and Reuters and that sort of thing. And anytime there was a news alert, you'd had a little bell go off and the machine would start printing out the news item.
Right.
You know, U.S. invades Iraq. What else was going on back then? You know, it's Chicago on fire. D.B. Sweeney, whoever, D.B. Cooper.
Right.
Sweeney's the actor. So
it could be news about D.B. Sweeney as well.
Yes, exactly. Kardashian gets married. You know, anything right, that's sure. considered a news item, it would come across the way they say it is come across the wires. All right. So history lesson's over. So it come across the wires. This news that CBS is actually developing a new Star Trek series to debut in January 2017.
Yeah.
This is from CBS's website. A totally new Star Trek television series is coming in January 2017. Where have I heard that before? The new series will blast off with a special preview broadcast of the premiere episode on the CBS television network. And the premiere episode and all subsequent first-run episodes will then be available exclusively in the United States on CBS All Access.
Yes.
I'm going to come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new Star Trek will introduce new characters seeking imaginative new worlds and new civilizations. While exploring the dramatic contemporary themes that have been a signature of the franchise since its inception in 1966. Alex Kurtzman will serve as executive producer for the series. Kurtzman co-wrote and produced the blockbuster films Star Trek with Roberto Orci and Star Trek Into Darkness with Orci and Damon Lindelof. Both films were produced and directed by J.J. Abrams. Now, that's kind of a two-edged sword there. We'll get to that in a minute, too. The new series will be produced by CBS Television Studios in association with Kurtzman's Secret Hideout. That's his production company. Kurtzman and Heather Kadeen will serve as executive producers. Kurtzman is also an executive producer for the hit CBS television series Scorpion and Limitless. Limitless, of course, one of the shows that we recap over at scififorme.com.
Right.
And the new program will be the first original series developed specifically for U.S. audiences for CBS All Access, cross-platform streaming service that brings viewers thousands of episodes from CBS's current and past seasons on demand, plus the ability to stream their local CBS TV television stations live for $5.99 a month. Star Trek, which will celebrate its 50th anniversary in 2016, is one of the most successful entertainment franchises of all time. The original Star Trek spawned a dozen feature films and five successful television series. Are they counting Enterprise for that? Maybe. Anyway, almost
Enterprise had a few good episodes.
Fourth season was much better. When Manicoto took over,
yeah,
he almost saved it, but it was past the point.
It
was too far gone. Almost half a century later, the Star Trek television series are licensed on a variety of different platforms, more than 190 countries. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, so we get down here, and there is there's a note, and I still need to find this because I've found mention of it, but I haven't sourced it yet. But apparently this new series is not going to be connected to the movies.
That was my understanding as well.
Very, very vague mention there, but either that means it's going to be just a different ship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fine. It's not connected to the movies because it's a different crew,
right.
which we expect it to be anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's not connected to the movies in that it's going to be...
Original universe.
Original universe, maybe?
There's a couple different things you could do there, because you could certainly go back to the original universe without any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that...
Or you could go forward in the future.
Right. And I think that what's ultimately your goal here is to tell a good story, right? I mean, that should be the goal.
Should be.
And whether you're telling it in the new universe or the original universe, connecting it too much to the movies, either set of movies, either... Mm-hmm. Or any of the original series, has some serious risks.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, you've still got to be consistent with, you know, the idea of Star Trek.
Oh, sure, but we've already seen that the idea of Star Trek has a lot of flexibility.
Didn't do that.
Well, but we've already seen that in the context of the original TV show and its sequels.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a wide range in formats and types of storytelling. Some worked better than others. But I mean, remember the whole brouhaha when Deep Space Nine dared to have a series set on a thing what didn't zip around the galaxy. You know, it was a you'd set on a space station. What?
When's the last time any Star Trek went out there that away? I mean, Voyager was pretty much the only one that had a ship going out and meeting, you know, the whole Strange New Worlds, New Life, New Civilizations out there.
Right.
Voyager was the only one that really did it.
Sure. But
after the original series.
Right. But also, Next Generation.
Not a lot.
Well, but.
Not as much as you might think.
Well, okay. But, and Voyager's structure was a little different too, because, of course, they weren't doing it because they wanted to.
Right.
Right. That sense of let's go out and exploring was less like, you know, we happen to come across these guys and, oh, look, they're interesting.
Right. Well, although Janeway did sit there and, you know, in the first couple episodes when they were stranded, they were like, she's like, we've got a job to do. We're Starfleet. This is an opportunity for us to explore.
But it didn't necessarily play out like that in terms of the series.
True.
And unfortunately, Enterprise, because it was a prequel, ran into a lot of the prequel problems. Which is, and now we have to introduce this alien race. Oh, yes. Look, it's this alien race. You know.
Oh, it's the Andorians.
Yeah, and while there were some interesting things that were happening with Enterprise, there were a lot of things that didn't ultimately work often enough so that when you got to the final season and things were improving, you'd already hemorrhaged so much of your audience and hemorrhaged so much of your goodwill and your name recognition and name branding. And I'm pretty sure that this new series will have the word Star Trek, and the music will seem a lot more Star Trekian.
Oh yeah, it'll be Star Trek.
There will be no pop song, probably. Let me qualify that. I hope there will not be a pop song.
But really though, Enterprise's title sequence was not that bad. I mean,
no,
the
it wasn't.
The song was odd, mm-hmm. but you look at. The visual elements of it.
Oh, no, the visuals are fine.
I thought it was cool.
Actually was pretty cool. But I think that they're...
Although you could tell when you switch from actual archival footage to the CG stuff.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, some of the CG that was so impressive has not aged well.
No.
And that's just, you know, the technology moves ahead. But... Mm-hmm. It doesn't have, I mean, it certainly has its charms, and some of it I would not trade for the world, but, you know, you could sit there, look at some of that and go, wow. I think you and I were talking, and I may have referenced it on a previous episode that I was watching the sci-fi version of Dune.
I think we were talking about that last week, actually.
Yeah, we actually been. And it stands up. It's great cast.
Yeah.
But the visuals, the digital effects on that are, and I think it was Weta.
I think you're right.
Who did the digitals on that, and they just have not aged well.
Yeah,
which is too bad. But it's okay. It's the same reason that I'll always like watching Forbidden Planet and going, okay, you know, they're okay. But anyway, the issue I think that really and it bothered people a lot is that the word Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
It was not Star Trek Enterprise.
Right. It was just Enterprise. The first season.
And I think that really bothered people. And part of that is it's a sense of continuity that felt disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of fans, hit him right there. And it's like, oh, what are you doing?
Yeah, I think the two words that are hitting a lot of that are going to hit a lot of fans with this new show are the words Alex Kurtzman. Because Kurtzman and Orsi don't have a consistent track record.
No, but okay. But at the end of the day, who does? We talk about we bring these. I mean, I'm not going to be a cheerleader for either of these guys. But I'm also not going to be going, well, we're doomed. Doom and gloom, walla, walla, walla.
Well, no. I mean, it's like David S. Goyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Goyer has his moments.
Right. When it works, it works.
When it works, and when he keeps his mouth shut, and that might be okay. Kurtzman and Orsi, they don't have as consistent a track record. I mean, you look at the stuff that they've done, most of it's crap. And I don't know how much of that is Kurtzman, how much of that is Orsi, because they're no longer partners on the movie side.
Mm-hmm.
And Orsi's name is not attached to this new Star Trek project.
Right.
Which is probably a good thing, because Orsi has proven himself to be... what's the word that I'm looking for? Not respectful of the fans, not respectful of the of the source material.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag for me at this point. I'm thinking, oh, that's kind of cool, a new Star Trek series. Oh, it's Kurtzman. Oh, well, this is we're still getting the Abrams verse in the movie theaters, and I'm concerned as a fan. I'm concerned that the Abrams Star Trek is going to influence this new CBS Star Trek more than it should.
Well, okay, if it's set in the same universe, it will have an influence, but if they move it forward in time. Make it, you know, not necessarily make it the next generation of the movie universe, the new movie universe.
Maybe Enterprise C era.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, just you know, whatever it is, because the thing is, of course, it's a brand new universe. So you can do whatever you want,
right?
You know, it could be the new Enterprise B. You know, completely bypass the Harriman years.
Sure.
Because most people don't even know about the Harriman years. So,
well, this could tell the Harriman years.
Sure, or you know, because they've changed, you know, they have actually opened up the entire future of that version of the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
And so they can go anywhere they want with it. The trick is, like anything else, story. And if they are not...
They haven't proven so far yet that they can tell a good story of the Star Trek universe.
Well, interestingly enough,
Rick'em Rack'em Roller Coaster Special Effects is not story.
If you had pulled out the Wrath of Khan homage that Into Darkness was, or reshoot, homage, yeah, reshoot, much, whatever you want, the core story isn't terrible. The core story is actually a kind of a Star Trek story to them in large part, because it's basically it's a modern day issue that's transplanted into the Star Trek science fiction setting. And if they had told it without Khan, spoiler, I guess, if they told it without Khan, it would have actually worked a lot better, because of course it's not an unfamiliar story to the Star Trek universe. It's a military commander saying, you know, the civilian authorities can't do this. I have to do it.
Right.
And essentially trying to create a war. It's a wag the dog situation. It's a military coup.
Right. But when did Star Trek become all about military actions and action? I mean, granted, in the movies, you've got to do a lot of the action scenes, and I get it.
I mean, okay, Wrath of Khan, as much as it is a classic and one of the finest Star Trek films ever made, it is very much, you know, they embrace the nautical influence. They embrace naval.
It's a World War II Navy.
It's Horatio. It really is the Horatio Hornblower. It's an 18th century. I mean, because it's Moby. It literally is Moby Dick. It's Horatio. It's Horatio Holm. We're getting a Moby Dick movie That's the true story. I'm sorry. I saw an ad for this, and all I could think is...
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth's in it.
At what point did someone sit there and go, you know what I need to see? I need to see the real story of Moby Dick.
Yes.
And hopefully what that means we're going to get is we're going to get a half an hour, maybe 45 minutes of whaling information. And you know, how the oil is processed, and just like the book. So, but it's...
Water. Water. The endless sea and the endless ocean. How many chapters can you describe water?
Enough.
Yeah, more than three.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, this is were we calling for this? But anyway, digression over. But of course the model of storytelling, and I've talked about this a lot in lately in the Doctor Who reviews I've been doing, which is we've talked about this too. Mm-hmm. Storytelling models change, and the difference between a storytelling model on television and the storytelling model on movies is vastly different.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But the difference in time from when Star Trek was on the air on television to when it got to the movies, there was a shift in the way we consumed the kind of stories we wanted.
Right.
And that really affected Star Trek, because you look at the first Star Trek film, and if you have not seen it, or the last time you saw it, folks at home, and you sat there and went, oh, this film is really kind of slow.
Watch the director's cut. Yes, much better.
And it's really, I think it's actually like a minute or something shorter. It's not even, it's so...
Yeah, I don't think there's a difference very much in the time.
The difference in time is so minor, but the cut is so good.
And the sound mix.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's got a sound mix.
And they went back and added in the effects they couldn't put in. They match the original effects. It's beautifully done. Highly recommend going to see the director's cut of that. Or go buy it. Just do that. Yeah. You'll be happy. But the way people reacted to that set a tone. Mm-hmm. At the studio at Paramount, going, they thought it was dull.
But it made, like George Takei says, it made a ton of money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they decided to make another one.
That's right. So you end up with a film that in many ways is a classic adventure story. It's a story about revenge. It's a story about family. It's a story about friendship. Mm-hmm. All these great moments, all these great, powerful things. But it really kind of set a tone. And you needed to have that kind of big, dramatic conflict.
Right.
And you saw what happened when they tried to do a Star Trek movie that was more about ideas. We called it Star Trek V, The Hunt for God.
Okay.
Okay. And then we had...
Insurrection was another one like
that. So, yeah. And not to say you can't tell those great stories. I would actually love to see a well-done Star Trek religious episode.
Mm. Well, and religion played a big factor in DS9 for a lot of episodes.
Oh, sure. So you can do it. I mean, yeah. And if you want to make it an allegory, if you want to take a hand from, you know, a tip of the hat from Star Trek's vast history of doing this, you could do a really good allegory on the state of, you know, culture and religion and all the things you want to do, because that Star Trek's got if you got the right writers, you've got a good hand at it.
Yeah.
But,
I just don't think Kurtzman's the one to do it.
Well, but of course, again, you're looking at the question is: are you executive producing or are you writing?
Well, they're searching for a writer.
Okay, so
he's going to be executive producer, right, and I expect, if anything, he'll have a hand in the pilot.
Oh, sure.
But they're looking for a writer. Whatever.
And I think ultimately that's what we're going to end up with, because it's not really feasible anymore to do this sort of thing and have like one person be the writer right. for a series. We've seen people try, and it doesn't always work.
Maybe we should, hey, CBS.
I got some ideas.
And that's the other thing and we can talk about this after the break, is whether or not they're going to have the submission policy that the other Star Trek shows used to have. We'll get into that after the break. We'll let you hear from superherostuff.com. We're going to refill coffee mugs, and we will be right back with more H2O. Stand by.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at superherostuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. Superherostuff.com, where heroes shop.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back, and so is our discussion of each and every episode as we gather down in the super secret underground bunker at World Headquarters. Join us for recaps, analysis, and discussion, with a few digressions along the way. And you do have security clearance to listen. Level 117 every week, part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, only on scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon, or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
You want a multiverse? We've got them all. Get the latest news at scififorme.com.
Back on H2O, Jason Hunt here with Timothy Harvey. And we are talking Star Trek. Now, I mentioned that I'm concerned that Alex Kurtzman is in charge.
Right.
The other thing that bothers me about this, well, there's several things that bother me. But let's talk about the release date. It's going to be January 2017, which, if you've got that much lead time between now and then, there's nothing that prevents you from running that first episode on September 8th, 2016. Doctor Who managed to do it. 50th True. Anniversary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, November 23rd. Mm-hmm. You know, BBC ran it, and it was a huge worldwide thing. Everybody ran it at the same time frame and everything, right?
Sure.
They did it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that says that Star Trek couldn't do the same thing. If you're going to do a 50th anniversary thing, especially given the fact that the next Star Trek movie is not going to come out in September.
Right. Well, I'm sure they're going to do something. I mean, they'll do something to celebrate it. But whether or not you do the, you know, I would not.
The ideal would be to do it on September 8th.
Sure, ideal. Yeah, but I mean,
especially since the only the pilot episode is the only one we're going to get on broadcast.
Right. Well, you know, it's not bothering me yet. It's far enough away that things can change. It's far enough that, you know, I would also rather see them not push it up if it's going to not be good.
Yeah, but you've got a whole year between now and then.
Sure, but
to
we
find
also,
a writer to write your script, to, you know, put all this production together. You can do that in a year.
Oh, sure you can, but sometimes you shouldn't.
Sure.
Yeah. Well. Okay.
Well, still.
Am I? You know. But I'm right, and you're right too. So, but they're going to do something for the 50th.
I would hope.
But it doesn't bother me that the show isn't going to like debut on the 50th or come out exactly in the 50th year. That doesn't really upset me.
What about the fact that the pilot episode is the only one we're getting on broadcast? The rest of it's going to be on CBS All Access.
Sure, but we also know this is a model that we're going to.
Well,
I mean, Netflix is just, well, you know what? How are you else going to watch your Daredevil?
Well, and that's the thing. That's the only reason I got Netflix was to watch Daredevil.
Sure,
but and for those of you who are not familiar, CBS All Access is the CBS version of Netflix, Hulu.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because CBS does not participate in Hulu. All of the other networks do. I think there are some older CBS shows on Hulu.
Yeah, I think so.
But they don't have a controlling partnership. It is like the rest of the networks do.
Right.
They're not involved in that. So this is going to be a new thing where mm-hmm. Star Trek is the first one out of the gate for original content that's made just for the paid streaming service that you get through CBS.
Well, also remember that what did Next Generation premiere on?
Well, Next Generation was the first syndicated.
Right.
It was a first run syndicated model. Mm-hmm.
What network was it on?
It wasn't. Voyager
was on.
Was the flagship show for
UPN.
The UPN. Yeah, for the Paramount Network.
Where's UPN now?
It's the CW.
Right. These things, everything changes.
And as I said in the article I wrote for this thing, Star Trek has been part of new distribution models mm-hmm. before. This is nothing new. This is the first time you're going to have to pay for it.
Well, no, it's not true because
You pay for cable.
Right. There you go.
Okay.
And you paid for cable.
But the
way we're paying for cable is a thing that bothers people.
Well, sure, because you can't pick your channels.
Exactly. And so I think we're going to see just a lot more of this. We're just going to see a flurry, plethora, gob of little tiny networks. Online or streaming or whatever you want to call it. You're going to have your Netflix and your Hulus and your CBS this and your Paramount that and your, whatever. BBC has a new network.
Right. Well, and Paramount dropped a bunch of old movies on their YouTube channel.
Sure.
So they're getting, I think that's the first step to something.
So I think that it's we have, like we've talked about many, many times before, we have actually had a chance to watch this all change. But give it another 15 years, mm-hmm. and everyone's going to sit there and go, yeah, and?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, this article I ran across in the Hollywood Reporter, mm-hmm. it's dated November 5th, Tim Goodman is the author. Your show is dead, or the age of denial in broadcast TV. And he's making the point that it has been made before in other places. But he's basically saying the model, the broadcast model, is broken mm-hmm. and has been broken for a long time. And your main broadcast networks, CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, CW to some extent, although not as much, but especially the big three, the first three, need to understand that they are no longer the powerhouse television networks that they once were because of the fragmentation
mm-hmm.
of television into so many channels. You now have to look at NBC, CBS, Fox as cable channels, as cable networks.
Oh, yeah,
not
to some degree, sure.
As broadcast networks, because the days of 17, 18, 20, 22 million people watching an episode are gone.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Because there's so much other stuff out there in terms of content that you can be watching. I watch Supergirl, not Gotham. I mean, those are choices that I make.
Right, of course.
And at a particular time slot. Now, and with DVR, you got your Live Plus 3 and your Live Plus 7 and all this different, there's so many different ways to watch shows anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers don't support the model that the broadcast networks are desperately trying to hang on to.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why you're starting to see series orders get trimmed instead of shows just being flat out canceled.
Right.
That this year has probably been the wildest for that kind of thing. I mean, Minority Report gets trimmed, Blood and Oil gets trimmed, all
sure.
of these different mm-hmm. shows.
Right.
Well, we started off with 13, now we're at 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what does that mean? What is that going to do if nobody's watching the show anyway? How does that help?
Well, okay, but you've already committed the money. People have been paid. You've got contracts with actors that have been paid. You might as well get your money out of it.
Right.
And so financially, I think it's the best of a bad decision. But yeah, well, it's, you know, the model has changed so much. You had a captive audience when we were in our teenage years.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, when in the 70s and the early 80s, three networks and PBS and maybe
we had
a local act.
I think we had four in Dallas when I was growing
up. Okay. Because we had CBS, NBC, ABC.
Yeah.
And PBS.
PBS.
Yep. And then maybe some cable access. But, you know,
Well, you're talking local cable access.
Yeah, local cable.
That wasn't even cable.
It wasn't like really cable. Cable. Yeah, no, it was antenna stuff. But that was it. That was all there was. There was no options. So you not only have a captive audience, but you had gigantic viewing numbers.
And that was also where you had the television runs for theatrical movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to see, how many times did we see Star Trek II on ABC with of the extra footage?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it was the only way you could see it because it wasn't anywhere else put out the director's cut.
Well, and you were getting the stuff on VHS because you didn't have VHS in the 70s or a good chunk of the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, I rented a VCR in college from the video stores, and you would give them your deposit.
Yep. And it was a little plastic suitcase type of thing.
Yeah.
And you could hook it up to your TV.
Kill somebody with that plastic suitcase. Do not drop that on your foot.
I wonder if anybody's got one of those.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do. But
we need one. We need one for just to have
just
in the
to have it.
Set it next to that apple over there.
There you go.
Folks, I'll post this. I'll post a picture on our Instagram. You can see it is an Apple IIc.
Yeah.
And it still works. I'll
post a picture. What's the memory on that thing?
I don't know. A little. 256K, I think.
Probably.
Yeah.
So the era, and you could, if you were an advertiser, you know, it was your golden days because you didn't. now the networks, because they build it around events, like we've got the Super Bowl contract,
right.
Or we've got
Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football, or we've got Dancing with the Stars, or whatever big thing it is, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever the thing is, that's when you look at your advertisers and say your ad is going to cost this much.
Do you remember when NBC ran Schindler's List for the first time?
Mm-hmm.
With limited commercial interruptions, brought to you by Ford. That was one of those very first times that they sat there and they went, okay. Not as many commercials will charge more and put your brand all over it, and we don't have as many commercials.
Right.
And that seemed to be at the time when they announced that, and then you had a few others happen afterwards, that it seemed to be maybe the networks were going to play with that model a little bit more, and then they didn't.
Yeah, it just really depends. I mean, it all comes down to how they're profit worked out on it, and I honestly don't know how that was.
I don't know.
So, but
well, and then the other thing too you got to consider is the Nielsen numbers, which nowadays, you know, back in the day, it was you know, like I said, with three networks and a couple of local channels, it was easier to track.
You had a captive audience,
but in real practical terms. And I've talked about this before. When I was working for an ABC affiliate up in St. Joseph, Missouri, which is about an hour north of here, we had a workshop on the Nielsen book and, you know, the diaries, how it worked and how it's all tabulated and how things are done to figure out the Nielsen ratings, right? And up in that market, which I think it was like Market 235, teeny tiny little market, the way the Nielsen diary books or dispersed, there was, at the time, and this was 15 years ago, there was one person, there was one book in Nottoway County, Missouri. So that one person, assuming he filled out his Nielsen diary, that one person represented the entire county.
Right.
In terms of who's watching what show. So it's incredibly inaccurate. I don't really understand how Nielsen could sit there and still say that they're the most accurate measurement anywhere, because they're not. And it's been an unspoken, not really a secret, that everybody knows the Nielsen numbers aren't all that great, aren't right. all that accurate anymore. And as much as people like to complain about the Nielsen numbers, nobody's come up with a different model. Nobody's come up with something different. Nobody's come up with an alternative, because nobody wants to walk away from Nielsen, because they do have a lot of research data, you know, demographics and, you know, shopping habits and all of that stuff. Okay, fine.
Right.
You know, your target market behaves thusly.
Mm-hmm.
So that information is still really important. So you don't want to cut off that hand. But at the same time, you've got to have a way, and this is one of the reasons why online viewing hasn't become the golden goose yet, because you've got to have a way to accurately measure who's watching what.
Right. Well, and
you got to figure out how to make money off of it.
Right. Because we fast forward through the commercials.
Yeah.
And you can skip this. You can skip this ad in 4, 3, 2. One.
Well, and now we've got YouTube Red coming.
Right.
Which is going to do away with all of the ads.
Sure.
It's going to be a paid model.
For a subscription
fee.
And
you've got, Hulu, and you've got Netflix. You got. It just bothers me that that's what we're coming to.
Well, but, okay, but here's the problem with the alternative. There isn't one.
Yeah. Well, you do like Vivo. Vivo doesn't have commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it's music videos, so it's only 4 or 5 minutes a piece. But at certain points during the day,
mm-hmm.
if you just go to Vivo and you just leave it open and you just watch videos all day,
mm-hmm.
every now and again you'll get a sponsor card. It's just a full screen graphic, pops up for about 5-10 seconds, and then it goes away. I don't know if they're still doing it. I mean, when Vivo first launched, that's what they were doing. And
oh goodness, I don't know.
For 3 hours, you'd see a State Farm insurance card that would pop up.
Right.
You know, Vivo's brought to you by State Farm Insurance. And they'd go, and they'd be gone.
Right.
And I don't know. Whoever comes up with a way to monetize online viewing in a significant way, they're going to be set for life.
Sure. But I don't really think there is the magic bullet thing anymore. I don't think you can have. I mean, it was when you had and this is not to say, of course, that advertising didn't change in network history,
mm-hmm.
right? So,
right.
The Marlboro Entertainment Hour,
we sat and listened.
Such and such a coffee brings you.
Right. We sat and listened to Abbott and Costello.
Mm-hmm.
James was doing research for his performance class. They were doing some research on vaudeville acts.
Oh, cool.
And so we pulled up on YouTube somewhere. There's a copy of the entire hour of Abbott and Costello that includes the Who's on First routine.
Sure.
So we sat and we listened to the entire thing. Skinny Ennis was in it and Marilyn Maxwell and all of the musical acts and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And when Skinny Ennis mistakes Costello for the Mad Russian, I love it when you say, "How do you do?" It's like, wait, that's not me. That's the Mad Russian. But we listened to that whole thing, and that was sponsored by Camel.
Right.
Camel cigarettes. C-A-M-E-L-S. I mean, they had their own jingle and everything, and your announcer would read all the commercials and stuff, and James is looking at it, and it's like, what is this? These are the commercials.
Well, remember that cigarette ads and alcohol ads were around in our lifetime.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So
I remember the Marlboro Man.
Oh sure. So you just don't see that stuff anymore.
No.
You don't see the kind of print advertising for cigarettes anymore either.
No.
So it's the model keeps changing. The ability for the networks to control the ad stream that you got on network TV is gone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's there. They can still do it, but it's not. Like we've talked about, you have so many options now. Finding a way to monetize it across the board there's not going to be a one solution, not one size fits all. At least I can't see one. Somebody else, you know, clearly there are people thinking about this, but clearly they've been thinking about it for a while now, and they have not come up with a good solution.
Well, and this thing with CBS All Access, you've got, you know, different ways. You know, we talk about transmedia, you talk about different ways of streaming your content, and, you know, whether it's going to be on a tablet or a computer or a box on the TV, like a Roku device or something like that. And maybe they've figured out a way, you know, $6 a month. How many people do you, because really online viewing in terms of total numbers, I think the threshold is smaller in how you define a successful series.
Oh, sure it is.
So maybe, and it really, it kind of surprises me that they would be doing this with Star Trek, because Star Trek is almost guaranteed going to get you a decent sized audience on CBS.
Yeah.
It's Star Trek. It's Star Trek. It hasn't been on TV since, when did Enterprise go off the air?
Well,
90 something.
But
it's Star Trek.
Well, I know, but
it's probably the one show that's guaranteed to draw an audience, a network.
Yes and no.
If you're going to do a show that, oh, we're not quite too sure about it, we'll just go first run on web, you ought to do something that's, you know, okay, maybe it's a little bit more of a risk.
No, they're not,
but something you can afford to do.
It doesn't sound to me like they're saying we're not sure about it or just go on the web. It's more like, we want you to come use our service. This is how we're going to get you there. This is the bait.
Sure, yeah.
I think we are probably working our way to some sort of portal where you go to and you pick. You really do the a la carte thing. And it's going to take the death of the networks, the standard net broadcast network. It's going to all be, everyone's going to transition over to digital. And we're not far from that, really.
No,
our TVs are turning into computers.
Yep.
Our phones already have, but our TVs hadn't quite made it there, but they're working their way there.
I'm still not getting a TV with a camera in it.
I'm not getting a 4K TV until I can decide why I need to have that kind of resolution. Nothing, they're not producing anything that I need that resolution for. I love to, you know, give me 4K to edit in.
Sure.
Because that's like all the space to play. Yeah. I don't need to watch it or pay for it right now.
If you're doing maybe an underwater documentary.
Ooh.
You know, sea life and
sure.
And,
yeah. Well, then you
on
want
the coral reef.
Well, then you
want to sure,
get
great.
Well, then you want to get like a good 3D.
Yeah.
You know,
but other than that, I don't need to see baseball in 4K.
No, it doesn't look right in 4K to me.
No, it looks very weird. It looks hyper real. It's almost like it's almost like overcooked CG.
Well, I think some of it is the way our eyes have been trained, because you and I and our folks and our and my daughter, not so much James, we grew up on standard def television,
right?
And HD TV is great. I love seeing stuff in HDTV. I think some of it looks fantastic. But that's not 4K.
Right.
So.
And honestly, and, you know, I've grown up in the media industry. You know, I've got 25 years in media.
Mm-hmm.
And even having been trained to look at SD, HD, whatever, I don't see enough of a difference to make a difference.
Well, a lot of it tends to do with the medium you're watching it on.
Yeah.
So if you're watching anything on a standard definition television,
it's going to be standard def.
Yeah. And your HD image might look better because its source material is better, but it's only, you know, you're not watching it in HD.
Yeah.
You're watching an HD image on an SD TV, and it's not the same thing. So, and we got kind of technical here, didn't we?
That's okay.
Technical
along
and monetary.
The lines. I mean,
I think it's going to end. We're just going to end doing this sort of a la carte thing
where
you go in and say, I want this show.
Yeah.
And I want to have my superhero
Well, it'd be like Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
You order a show and you either get the episode or you get the whole season or whatever.
Right. And I think you're going to find, I mean, binge watching is becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're going to ultimately get some sort of, they'll find a way to be in competition with each other because they're companies and that's what they do.
And it makes me wonder if Star Trek is going to be made to binge watch like Daredevil was.
Daredevil told one story.
Right.
Star Trek's model overall, not exclusively, but overall it has been an episodic show with arcs.
But like you say, things have changed.
Things have changed. I would have no problem with them giving us a Star Trek show that had character arcs that we saw in a way that we have not been able to see. You know, you saw it in Deep Space Nine was the epitome of that.
Okay? Yes.
You watch these characters evolve for good and for ill.
Over a period of seasons. It wasn't just episode to episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just kept going.
Right. And that, I think, as a storyteller and as a consumer of other people's stories, I like that.
Yeah, I do too.
I like that a lot more than you know, Monster of the Week or Alien of the Week or Spaceship of the Week or whatever, you know.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with it.
The impact of the Monster of the Week contributes to the overall evolution of the character.
Sure. And I mean, there's some concern among fans with X-Files coming back. When you look at the story arc, the great, you know, the alien story arc in the original series, the percentage of that versus the percentage of Monster of the Week episodes,
right.
And you go, hang on, what are we bringing back? Are we bringing back the mythology, which we have to change because we've gone past the dates that we were talking about? Or do we, you know, do Monster of the Week? And Monster of the Week works to a point now, but again, with the kind of stories we want has changed. We don't necessarily want you can have a Star Trek show where every episode you go to a new world, but if things aren't changing from episode to episode, there you can't have the reset.
It'll stagnate.
You cannot. I mean, the original series, every episode has a reset button.
Yeah. I have said for a number of years now that if Star Trek were to ever come back, one of the ways that you could do it, and actually could do this pretty effectively depending on your budgets, would be to do not necessarily a single ship Star Trek, but do a Starfleet Star Trek. Because one of the things that's been the running gag among fans is Enterprise is the only ship in the quadrant.
Right.
You know, it's always the only ship in the quadrant. Well, and we've seen with the books with the Excalibur line, and we see a little bit with the Sulu stories, that you can tell stories set on other ships with other crew.
Sure, of course you can.
I would have no problem at all with a Star Trek series that tells the stories of multiple crews. We don't have to stay on the same ship through the entire show.
Well, okay, but you know what you could do?
You could cross them over and interact with them and stuff.
The way you do that is you do it like American Horror Story is doing it, where every season is a reset.
Yeah, you could do that. You could do that. So, even within
oh, sure,
the season,
but
you
I
could
think
do like three episodes in the Enterprise, three episodes on the Constitution, two episodes over here on the Hood, and you go back to the Enterprise and do it. And that way you can tell a broader overall start.
So
you could do Starfleet battles.
Well, you could. or what you do is you have somebody in the Paramount offices going, I'm looking over at the Marvel model, and we're gonna have it. So what you do is you have.
Well, see, because you could be shooting one show on the bridge set,
right,
and the other show on the Planet Hell set, because there's always going to be a Planet Hell set.
Oh, sure.
And the third episode will be on whatever you build for the episode that week.
Right.
And you can rotate back and forth. And then you've got basically three shows that are shooting all at the same time.
Yeah. And then you could build up to the great thing where all three ships have to combine to fight.
Exactly. Then you get Starfleet battles.
You get Starfleet battles. Is that a Doomsday Machine? There's... Well, and here's the thing. You and I are laughing and smiling about the idea of this, no matter who is producing this show.
And they got to go back to Vasquez Rocks.
Oh, of course.
For one shot.
We want to see what they do. You know.
Oh, sure. I'm looking forward to it. I want to see it. I'm hopeful.
However you feel about the new movies, which have been extremely profitable and are very, very popular.
Yeah.
With a younger audience, necessarily. Yeah. I mean, the older audience, the folks our age and older, original series fans.
The younger audience that doesn't know any better.
Well, it's kids today with their...
I know, they're rock and roll.
Rock and roll. Get off my porch. I don't even have a porch. I can't even say that. Get off my balcony.
There's a lawn in front of your building.
There is a lawnish kind of thing. Yeah. Yes. And I'm moderately optimistic about the new Star Trek movie because, of course, Simon Pegg is writing it. I just watched a really cute Simon Pegg romantic comedy that I can't remember the name of, and it was kind of adorable and dumb, and it was fun. some British film,
yeah.
That actually was, you know, he played an ordinary guy. It was like, it was very funny. He played his own age.
I think as long as I think the J.J. Trek universe, for me anyway, as a Trek fan, and I can't speak for anybody else, but for me as a Trek fan, the J.J. universe has gone the way of Enterprise. And you get, in that fourth season, Manny Koto coming in, and it started to recover, but it was too late. And if you get somebody like Simon Pegg who can come in and can write a Star Trek story that's actually a Star Trek story, I still think it's too late for that franchise.
I massively disagree, only for the dollar amounts.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's going to take it'll make a ton of money no matter what.
Well,
sure,
but that's
but it doesn't make it Star Trek.
Well, but that's
because JJ Trek and Into Darkness were not Star Trek movies; they were action sequences that had Star Trek brushed onto them as a pastiche, but they were not Star Trek movies.
Well, but the problem with some of the Star Trek movies that we've had have been they're not Star Trek movies, even when they were.
Right, but at the core of all of those stories, at the core of all of those films, is some sort of thinking idea.
Well, sure.
I mean, with Star Trek the Motion Picture, it was, you know, the unknown thing, right? And with Star Trek II, it was getting old.
Right.
And all of those different things. J.J. Trek and Into Darkness don't have those
things. Well, Into Darkness does, and that was completely hijacked by the fact that it was a Wrath of Khan thingy-what's-it.
Yeah.
And thingy-what's-it is the correct technical term for something I don't know how to call if it's, you know...
Because Orsi and Kurtzman don't trust their audience.
It's not a reboot. It's not a remake. It's a thing, what happened. But, you know, again, like I said earlier, the core of the story is somebody looking at the other, in this case, the Klingon Empire, and saying, they're going to attack us if we don't attack them first. And I've got a ship, and it's bigger and more powerful, and I'm going to start the war so that we can end the backlash against that from the people who view Starfleet as an exploration organization. Yep. If you had told that story, if you had stripped all the Khan stuff out and just had let Peter Weller be the bad guy, straight up, no, you know, you get 30 minutes of him being.
If you do it that way, then you get the book Dreadnought.
Well, but you also
so
don't.
That story's already been told.
Except that most people haven't read Dreadnought.
I know, but I'm just saying. You know.
Well, you have the potential for that, but. It still would have been a much stronger story. You could have done you would have ended up with the same kind of, you know, rock 'em, sock 'em, blow stuff up stuff. And you would have ended up with still one of the, a scene that is one of the, probably the biggest body count in Star Trek history. But, well, okay. Maybe not the biggest, but close. You know, if they should have just let Benedict Cumberbatch be John Harrison and not Brock Conan at all.
Right. And I agree with that.
And if you had just peeled, if you had peeled the layer of Khan off the movie, it would have been a stronger film.
I think the other thing too, and I've heard this complaint from a number of different places, that the science of the JJ universe is lousy. And, I mean,
well, red matter is hand wavy.
Magic transporters that'll go into warp. Okay. I mean, all of that stuff. The physics of it, it's just completely lame. And that's something that this new series is going to have to be very careful about,
mm-hmm.
because if you want to be Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way you do it, and there's a way you don't do it.
Sure.
And you can see this even in the fan films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some out there, some fan films where people will sit there and go, they get it.
Right.
They're doing it right. This mm-hmm. is Star Trek. I mean, Star Trek Continues is looked at that way, Phase 2 or, mm-hmm. or New Voyages, whatever they're calling it now. That one people look at pretty favorably. People are looking at Axanar and saying, this has got real potential to be, because
sure.
it looks and feels like Star Trek, because it's got ideas
mm-hmm.
that are not overshadowed by the Rock'em Sock'em Robot stuff.
Well, in fairness to JJ, he is a Star Wars kid,
right?
And as much as we all love Star Wars and are looking forward to the very not far from now.
Oh, I know. It's going to be here before we know.
Do not stare directly at the plot of Star Wars. Do not stare directly at the theology of Star Wars. Do not stare directly at the fact that Star Wars contradicts itself on a regular basis.
Yes, but Star Wars
but,
is mythology.
Okay, I know. But that's just it. JJ's a mythology kid.
Right.
And Star Trek isn't really mythology. The choice of the studio to have JJ direct the film... If there's a criticism of the movies, that's where it starts.
Oh, sure, yeah, because we've got a quote from some Paramount suit saying, make it less Star Trek.
Right. And JJ, not being a fan of Star Trek, while certainly probably enjoying his cast, enjoying the building the universe,
mm-hmm.
is, and in all fairness, is not responsible for maintaining our Star Trek.
No, I get that, and you know you get people like Kurtzman and Orci and whoever else, Lindelof. None of them have an obligation to maintain that continuity.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like when DC switched over and did the New 52.
Oh, I'm not saying it was a smart decision.
No, it wasn't. Well, from the standpoint of the Paramount accountants, it was a smart decision because it made a ton of money.
Well, from the standpoint of recognizing that you cannot keep making movies with your cast because they've gotten too old, and recognizing that some of them are dead.
Well, disputing that.
And recognizing that you are wanting to get out and tell new stories in that universe, and so you recast. Okay, that's what we do. That's how we've been doing that, you know, forever.
Sure.
How many different people have played Sherlock Holmes? And as much as we love Star Trek, sorry, Sherlock's got a bigger international footprint than Star Trek ever will.
Yeah, but...
it's different.
At the same time, though, there are plenty of opportunities to tell stories within that universe without having to go back to the same cast of characters.
But that's the decision they made.
Yeah.
And that's what we're living with. So I hope that the new series... I have no problem... Pick a universe. I don't care. If they set it in the movie universe, then, you know, distinguish it from the movies so that it can stand on its own.
Right.
Don't fall into the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. trap.
Oh yeah.
Where you spend half the season just spinning your wheels, and trust me, you know, everything we've talked about, a spinning its wheels Star Trek is dead.
Right.
So.
I don't know. I could throw my hat in the ring. Let's throw our hat in the ring to write the pilot.
Oh, sure. Happy to.
Say, hey, Mr. Kurtzman, give us
a
shot.
I will happily come up with two or three different ideas.
This is what I want to see also, because if you look at the history of Star Trek, it is unique-ish in that there were opportunities there with Next Generation and Voyager and DS9 for fans to come in and write scripts.
Right.
They had an open submission policy back in the day. And I think not on Enterprise, but on the other shows, they did this. You are allowed, even without an agent. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of shows, well, most shows, 99% of the shows, will not take any script that's written by anybody unless it comes through an agent.
Sure. It's a filter. You have to have, it's a good choice to have one.
Star Trek was different in that you could, and this is how Ronald D. Moore got started. Mm-hmm. He of Battlestar Galactica now, and Outlander. Mm-hmm. And almost Pern.
Yeah.
But he got his start. He wrote a script and he brought it in as a fan on a tour.
Mm-hmm.
And turn it in. And they said you could, even without an agent, you could turn in maximum of 2 scripts on spec. Mm-hmm. Just write a script, send it to us, we'll look at it. I missed it by that much.
It would be great. It would be great to see that. And
yeah, I'd love to have a chance to do that.
It would be, I'd be skeptical that's going to happen just because the way things are now,
yeah,
the way things change. But it would be fantastic to see.
It would be.
So, you know, dear Paramount.
Yeah, really. I don't know. We'll have to see how it shakes out. I'm cautiously optimistic. I have my concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Like anything else.
Sure.
But
We are so far out from seeing anything.
Well, I think, too, with all of the, like we were talking about the fan films, I think the bar has been set higher, even, for expectations of what you're going to see on the web. Because look at what all of these guys are doing with, not to say amateurs, but people who are not 100% full-time in the business.
Right.
You know, some of these guys are doing it as a hobby, mm-hmm. and it turns out really great. There's a new show, I just ran across a mention of it today, Star Trek Progeny.
Hmm.
It's a new fan film. It is they just hired Gates McFadden.
Oh well,
to be part of the cast, and she's not going to play Crusher. She's going to play a different character. But the premise of the show follows the granddaughter of James T. Kirk.
Hmm. Okay.
Which I'm wondering how they're going to explain that, but. Oh, that's the premise of the show. Okay.
Hang on.
No, wait. I know where you're going to go.
What color is she? Is she green?
Yeah. I'm saying, you know, within the canon of the show, within the continuity of the show, you know, Kirk had one child.
That he was aware of.
That he was aware of. Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yeah.
I mean, he was the Lothario of space.
And it is a fan film.
Sure.
So, you know, they can get away with doing some different things.
Well, and there's nothing.
But the standards, you look at what the amateurs are doing. And by mm-hmm. amateurs, I mean the people who are doing this as a hobby because they love it.
Right.
As opposed to the people who are officially doing it for Paramount and CBS. You know, not a critique on the quality of the stuff. But, you know, the people who are doing this as an amateur production, they've got some really good stuff.
Oh, sure.
The effects on some of this stuff is great. So the expectation now is going to be, okay, what can CBS do better? Because when they did the remastered Star Trek
mm-hmm.
with all of the new CG stuff, there were people sitting there saying, New Voyages is better than that.
Right.
You know, Phase 2, New Voyages, their special effects are better than this new stuff they got in the HD versions of the official one.
Right.
So I don't know. CBS is going to have to step up. Kurtzman's going to have to step up because people are going to be looking at this thing with high expectations.
Oh, yeah. No, I would agree.
Especially if they're going to have to pay for it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that pilot episode is going to have to be so brilliant.
It's going to have to be a lot better than Encounter at Farpoint.
Ooh. Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. As fond as we all remember Generation.
Or the finale of Enterprise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was all... it wasn't a dream so much as it was a history lesson, so much as it was a... we just give up.
yeah, that's what it was. All right, and we're going to give up now for this episode.
That's right. We got to come to an end.
And if you want to share your opinion, don't forget, you can send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. You can call our hotline, 573-42-SCIFI. If you want to help us expand our resources, and maybe one day we could produce our own shows of some sort, which we've got on our list. You can pledge your support over at patreon.com/scififorme. And, of course, all of the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
And those of you who are interested in cosplay, our Pinterest boards are all cosplay all the time. And that's going to do it for us. You can leave us a comment. Tell us what you think. We are still looking for those of you who want to send us questions. We're going to try to do a Stump the Host episode here shortly.
Yes.
We do appreciate all of the feedback, all the support. Don't forget, share the links, tell other people about us, because right now that's the only way that our audience is growing. All right, for all of us here at SciFiForMe.com, I'm Jason Hunt. Timothy Harvey is here.
Always a pleasure.
And we will be back with another episode of H2O next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is SciFiForMe Radio.